Hi, this is James Fratsky, the co-founder of Fratsky Media, and this is my startup story.
Every wildfire began with a spark. Every superhero has an origin story, and every single startup has a moment that they point to as their beginning, and every founder has a purpose that drove them in the midst of all obstacles. That is the startup story. Startup Story began in January of this year with the vision of telling stories that would tell the transparent stories of entrepreneurs of all stages in business. And we've told the startup story of large established brands like E! Entertainment Television and Veridesk, and we've shared the startup stories of smaller startups like Monkwood Studios and Barbecue Wife. Our hope in sharing these stories is that the would-be entrepreneur would have a real understanding of the entrepreneurial journey and not fall into the trap that comes from reading the incredibly rare success stories that make the media outlets. The other reason I started the Startup Story was to help existing entrepreneurs realize that the challenges they're facing are common and are not unique to them. Now, don't get me wrong. I love the massively successful stories as much as anyone else, but those stories are the anomaly and not the norm. Would I love to unpack the startup story of Uber and Instagram? Absolutely. But I would want to talk about their challenges and how they overcame them so that you, the startup story listener, one, would be encouraged that their challenges are similar to yours and that you're not experiencing anything that is unusual for the entrepreneurial journey. And two, that you'd be given a different perspective from someone who has pushed through that challenge with hopes of providing you a different way of seeing the solution. Now, from firsthand experience, I know it's hard to see the shores when all you're doing is thrashing around in the flood, trying to keep your head above water. And that's why I love learning from people that are farther down the road than I am. And that's why I love bringing those stories to you. All that to say, Startup Story is a podcast about the real journey of entrepreneurship, and anything real has some scars worth talking about. So now let's jump into this week's episode. Our guest today is James Fratsky, a co-founder of Fratsky Media. Fratsky Media is a digital marketing consultancy based in Southern California. Are they a large 100-person agency? Not at all. Is James's journey in bringing Fratsky Media to market relevant to you? 100%. Full transparency. What piqued my interest about Fratsky Media was that James and his brother are identical twins. That said, it was not long into our conversation that I realized James's startup story is much deeper than the fact that his co-founder is his twin. Although, I am incredibly curious how many twins go into business together. I think there's something of interest there, but I digress. What I really appreciated about James's startup story was how well he articulated the challenges that come from comparison to those around you, the complexities and benefits of being raised by entrepreneurs, and the importance of looking out for family at all times. I think that last point is a unique byproduct that comes from co-founding with your family, but it's something that all of us need to hear because the entrepreneurial journey will sometimes lead us to a place where the only people around us to help are those closest to us. And oftentimes, that is our family.
My twin brother and I, we were raised by entrepreneurs, and it's kind of gone all the way back to my grandparents. So we're based in Fullerton, California. We're actually right across the street. Our office is right across the street from where my grandma had an antique store for 20 years. So it was always interesting growing up in that environment and seeing somebody that you really cared for own their own business. And that was just normal. You know, some people grow up and go to work with their parents and they wear a suit and tie or, you know, they have that typical 9-to-5 job. I think our experience was always, we went to work with our parents or our grandparents and they had their own businesses. And so that was just normal to us. Our dad, who is also a twin, and so they say it skips a generation, but for us, it didn't, right? So our dad's a twin, an identical twin. My co-founder, Ryan Fratsky, and I were identical twins. Him and his twins started a landscape business when they were, you know, 15, 16. They were always just hard workers. They turned that into buying their first house together. They turned that into buying their first cars together. So they just worked hard. And so when we grew up and he still had that landscaping business, we got to see that. That again was, that was what work looked like to us. Our mom, she's a kind of the visionary of the duo. So our dad was just a really hard worker and knew how to get things done. Our mom was always, well, how do you turn it into something bigger? Now, with that, she didn't always have the same follow through that my dad did. So she had a lot of businesses that started and ended.
Fascinating.
But I think Yeah. So one of her projects that I really liked was called Made by You, and it was in Whittier, and that's where she was from. But it was just a space where families could come and make things, and it was made by you. And so, again, just kind of seeing our parents start these things, and my dad being a hard worker, our mom being someone that liked taking chances, you take both of those things and kind of combine them. And that's how we kind of got that entrepreneurial mindset that we have.
That's fascinating. And it's interesting that you talk about your dad being, we'll say, the muscle, right? Like the hard worker, sure. the I'm just going to accomplish, I'm going to tackle this hill regardless of the challenges in front of me. Your mom kind of being the strategic side, right? The innovator, the creator, but having some challenges with some of the follow through, like the repeat serial entrepreneur because of some failed ventures. As you look back now, and I want to continue on with your younger years, but as you look back now, can you see that same narrative play out with you and your brother in your current venture? Is one more of that, I'm going to tackle this hill regardless of what's there, and the other one's better with strategic, but not so much follow through on the details? Like, do you see that playing out in your current venture?
There are certain things that Ryan is really strong at, and there's certain things that I'm really strong at, and I think we complement each other really well. In that same way, I feel like we both got both of those aspects of our mom and dad, you know, like equally distributed. So it's not like he's really good at the follow through and I'm really good at the visionary part. We're both like right down the middle on both sometimes, but we certainly complement each other where we fill in those blanks. So, but yeah, no, I think that's a really good question. I haven't thought through it in a way where I could give you a really solid answer.
And you know, it's funny that answer you gave though, only because I ask similar questions when it comes to like siblings and birth order and some of the dynamics that play out in that. I'm curious if that same answer you gave would play out for other twins that are co-founders, right? Because it is genetically, right. You are identical, right?
And it, right. You know, exactly.
And that a lot of times that's personality and appearance. So I'm just kind of curious if that play out, because I can tell you right now, in other sibling ventures, that answer would have been completely different.
Right.
And has been completely different. So going back to your childhood to continue on with that journey, having seen it though, because again, Southern California, the landscape business, probably incredibly competitive. It's a commodity in a lot of spaces. People just want that as cheap as they can get it. So I assume your childhood was not lavish and plush, and there were some challenges that came with being a child of an entrepreneur and even an entrepreneur in the landscaping business. Did you want to be an entrepreneur, or were you deterred from that because of the challenges you saw growing up?
I wanted to be an entrepreneur. But there's some interesting stories here that I'll kind of dig into a little bit. But on one end, you know, I think you probably talked to a lot of people. You had Zach Swire on a while ago. He's an acquaintance of mine as well. And the first thing out of his mouth is, oh, I had a landscape business. So there's some sort of connection there between entrepreneurs and hard work and landscaping. Yep. And I'm not allergic to that either. Ryan and I, one of the first businesses that we started when we started to be entrepreneurs is lawn mowing and just doing tasks around people's house and things like that. We started a business called Stain Pros, where we were literally staining fences. We grew up in the Temecula Marietta area, a lot of new houses there. Well, with those new houses came these redwood fences. Mm-hmm. And if you let them go uncured, you know, they tend to look really bad in a couple of years. So we saw a major market opportunity and went after that. But I think the consistency you see with a lot of entrepreneurs is they were all candy kingpins. They were selling candy in class. They were all, you know, doing these different things. And I certainly was guilty of that too. The fun thing about it was our mom was always very encouraging of that. So she would be the one that would be like, well, if we go to the 99 cent store and we get it for this much, your margin's that much. And then, you know,
that's awesome.
And it didn't really matter that it was against the rules, because you're not supposed to do that at school. But back to your point, I think we always wanted to be entrepreneurs. I think there was something about my dad's journey of always kind of being out on his own. He was the one that when we decided to go to college was like, okay, cool, you're going to do something different. Mm-hmm. You're going to take the more serious path. He never gave himself enough credit in what he did. And what he did really was be a provider, but it took a lot of work. And I don't think he ever glorified it. Mm-hmm. I don't think he ever saw himself as an entrepreneur. I think he just saw himself as somebody that worked hard and was able to fill a gap.
Yeah.
So I think that the journey that we went on was we went to college. We worked at Disney for 4 years in their special events marketing department. We went from there and we both were strategic account managers at a digital marketing technology company for 4 years. Ryan and I did both of those things together. So a lot of people jokingly ask, is it always a package deal?
I have to ask. I mean, is it?
Well, it doesn't have to be, but it certainly has been, right? So the funny thing is we take different steps apart and then somehow we always kind of come back together. So I had left Disney. I started working at this company called Brandify and the CEO said, hey, you're such a great worker. We're looking for more people like you. Do you know anybody? You know, it's like, yeah, I know just the person. I know someone exactly like me. And then, you know, there comes Ryan. So it's not always like we show up that Will Ferrell movie, Step Brothers or whatever it is. They do the interview together. You know, it doesn't always work that way. But I think we're always kind of thinking, how can we bring the other person along for the ride? Because we work really well together. Why wouldn't you want to work with your twin brother or your best friend or somebody that just compliments you really well? So my dad, when we started moving up the corporate ladder at these different companies, when I would go to him and say, I want to start this business. I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I want to start this business. He would actually surprisingly say, don't do it. Don't do what I did. You're going up this corporate ladder. You went to school. Like, so he saw that as success. Yeah. He never saw what he did as success. And he's still, him and my stepmom are still entrepreneurs to this day. Their full-time job and income comes from 6 jewelry stores that they own up in the San Diego area. And so he's got this long track record of being in business for himself, but then he's got these 2 sons and he says, don't do it. Yeah. So it's kind of an interesting
thing. Did he ever explain why? Why he gave you that guidance?
Not directly, but I think in certain terms, he would say stuff like, don't do what I did. Don't put yourself in the situation I did. I never graduated from college. You did. Why would you want to put yourself in that situation? I think he just saw the stress that went into being a business owner and saying, well, if you don't have to take that on, maybe you shouldn't.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing for him is, we're in digital marketing and he's not a digital focused guy at all.
Yeah.
So sometimes we'll tell him some of the projects that we're doing and he'll say, well, why would anybody pay you for that? Right. So he doesn't understand the context of it. And so I think that combined with just for him, I come back to that example I gave you. My mom was a visionary. My dad was a hard worker. So my dad sees a $1 million business and he goes, well, that's a good business. You really couldn't get it much higher than that.
Yeah.
And I see a $1 million business and I go, how do we get it to 10? How do we get it to 20 million?
Yeah.
And so I think that's part of it too. I think when saying to him, hey, we're going to go out and start this, I don't think he's got the same vision that we have sometimes. And so we see this big idea and he sees this small little thing. So I think those are some of the things that played into it a little bit.
So you knew you wanted to be an entrepreneur and you go to college. And how old are you, by the way?
28.
So the narrative of college was different 10 years ago when you entered it. And obviously there's a lot of upside to going to college. This is not the podcast where we debate whether or not college is necessary or anything like that. But in the entrepreneurial space, it's not. I mean, you don't have to go that route. So if you knew you wanted to be an entrepreneur, why pursue college? Because again, let me step back 1 second and say that of the entrepreneurs I have met, I don't know if anyone knew they wanted to be an entrepreneur. There was just a general appeal to it. Whereas you said you knew you wanted to be an entrepreneur. So why pursue college?
For my dad and my uncle, which is his twin brother, who is also a prominent kind of male figure in our lives that we really rely on his opinion a lot. They had been reinforcing in us for so long, take the safe route. And that's not bad advice.
Yeah.
Right? But it was kind of this idea of, and not in a bad way, but it certainly will sound bad when I say it. You're average. This whole family is average. That's all you're ever going to be. Might as well get into a lane where you can excel at that rather than to try and do something that's a little bit more visionary. So that's part of it. Now, looking back, hindsight being 2020, I don't regret it for a second. I don't regret spending 8 years of my career where you could say, well, that's 8 years you could have spent building a business. Yeah, but what I did was I wanted to be a photographer, so I went and worked for a photographer. I understood the bits and pieces. And so coming out of working for Disney, arguably one of the best customer service brands on the planet, and they do some other things pretty well too. Coming out of a technology company and being an account manager and working with Fortune 500 brands, understanding how their marketing departments work, understanding the logistics that go into actually running a company, contracts, negotiations, you know, figuring out your hard costs for things. I got a crash course in that. And so now I feel like our business, and we've been doing this for 2.5 years, we hit the ground running and we're able to jump in and sign some pretty large deals up front because we knew what that looked like. It wasn't like we were trying to figure it out in the moment. We kind of knew what the steps were and what we needed to execute on. So I think, again, hindsight being 2020, I'd do it again. Maybe I'd start a little bit of a side hustle, as they would say, during the college years to make a little extra bank. I just kind of focused on working, but I think it worked out well for me.
So coming out of college, you said Disney, and being in Orange County, Disney is a common first job or college job, however that transpired. I do find it interesting that somehow you and your twin brother were able to get a job with the same company, that because Disney is not easy to get into at all the time.
No, and here's the thing. I'll let me touch on that a little bit. And I went to Cal State Fullerton, so that's Cal State Disney, right? So it's all pretty common. Zach Swire went to Cal State as well. I don't know if he worked at Disney, but he probably did. Most people that go to Cal State probably worked at Disney at some point. With that being said, we showed up to an audition together for Disney. That's actually how we started working there. Was I jokingly say I played Prince Charming, and then I wait to see how people react. If they go, "Oh yeah, I see it," I feel good about myself. If they look at me kind of squinty eyed and like, "Really, you?" Then I'm kind of like, I feel bad about myself. But so it started off that way, where the role that we were in was called Innoventions, and it was about talking about different products and things like that. And so I think the twin thing played well there. I was like, "Oh, this is cool. These guys are outgoing and twins. That's interesting." What happened next then was we had some managers there take a liking to us and notice that we had some talent. And they said, "Okay, well, you guys don't really want to work here. What is it that you want to do?" "Well, we want to go into marketing." And they kind of helped connect the dots there. And so that's how the twin thing kind of kept going side and side. But I don't know. I think here's an interesting thing, and you probably don't have a lot of twin entrepreneurs listening to this. Maybe you do. My advice to the twin entrepreneur or just the twin listening is people will ask you as twins to separate. They will ask you to be different and distinguish yourself. I'm not sure why they do that. I think it's maybe a jealousy thing, that because they don't have a twin and they want one. And I'm only joking, but who knows? But I think that the inclination that a lot of people have when they're giving feedback is you guys should try to separate. I think what really worked for us was when we said, let's just do what feels natural to us. And what felt natural to us was doing things together. And I think that's been successful for us.
That's awesome. And if you are a twin entrepreneur listening, I would love for you to connect with us on Instagram at The Startup Story and just hashtag twinning. Like, just put a comment in James's episode announcement just so we can connect all the different twin entrepreneurs out there. That'd be
great.
It would be awesome if that's a much larger community than you and I both think. That would be pretty cool.
Right, right.
So you are with Disney. You then go to Brandify. At which step along the way did you start thinking of what your venture might be? And when did you actually move on that?
Yeah, so I was at Brandify for 4 years. And I think that the idea about the venture came towards the tail end of that. Just to kind of clarify things and set the scene, I think it was always something that I wanted to act on. Wasn't sure what it was going to be and was kind of just waiting for the right opportunity. So I think what happened was, 4 years into working for somebody else again, I kind of took a step back and said, well, when is the right opportunity? It will never be the right opportunity.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'd like to sit here and say that. And you hear this story a lot, and I'm not downing it at all, but well, the corporate trappings and the expense account, and I risked it all to leave and start this thing. I think for me, it was just, it will never be the right time. You have to make the time. Just go out and do it. I knew I was highly employable, so it wasn't like some big risk. I knew there was a backup plan. When you want to go do your own thing, that's always going to be chipping away at you. And it's just about when you decide to actually lean into it and take that step And the timing worked out really well. But at Brandify, what was neat was that because of the Disney experience, I was able to service some pretty large accounts because they liked the fresh perspective. So I worked with Dollar Tree. I worked with Jelly Belly, Advanced Auto Parts, Patagonia, some other brands because they liked what I was bringing to it because I came from Disney. I had a Disney background.
Yeah.
And you know, you were able just to service people differently than maybe somebody that had kind of grown up in the account management space. So I think after getting to learn these Fortune 500 brands and seeing my dad's companies and saying there's something in between here, in between a Walmart and Scott's body jewelry, these mid-sized businesses that are being demolished by these Fortune 500 mm-hmm. brands from mm-hmm. a digital perspective, how can we help those companies learn from the leaders and, if nothing else, get up to the standards of what it takes to win in digital? And then once we get you up to the standards, how do we then help you leapfrog the competition and learn from the leaders? So I think at some point in that four-year journey at Brandify, towards the end, I had the idea of like, well, that's what we need to go do. We need to go help these mid-sized companies win in digital because the world is changing. You know that. I know that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people know that.
Yep.
Your storefront is now your website. An ad in the newspaper is now Google Ads. Or, you know, word of mouth is now Yelp or Facebook or something like that. So all these things that are very analog are now very digital. And it's how do we help people kind of get with the times? And then not only get with the times, but how do we help them make digital their competitive edge?
That's awesome. That is awesome. So I want to talk about that transition, though, where you are leaving Brandify now to start Fratsky Media, because I think there's probably quite a few listeners that are in a job that they enjoy. It provides well for them or them and their family, but they too have an itch for something else. And maybe they're working on a side hustle right now, but they feel like, man, if I just give more to it, it could be that much greater. But, and the list goes on as to what the buts are. What was that move for you? Just up and leave, 2 weeks notice, gone, start new? Did you try to land your first account before you gave notice? What was that transition for you?
You nailed it on the head, right? There's a long list of things that you can go down of why not to do it.
Yep.
Okay, I have some advice and I can tell you the practical side of it. My advice is if you want to do that, there is no time like the present. So I would just put in that 2 weeks notice and go.
Yeah.
I've heard it from my dad and from my uncle, from people that are important to me that wanted me to stick more to the practical side. Well, why don't you start and you can do these things in the evening, on the weekend, and at least you still get your paycheck and all that. And sure, I mean, I think that's sound practical advice. I don't think you're taking yourself very seriously then if you do that. If you take that advice, and this is my opinion, so this isn't to diss anybody that might have a different opinion, but you're not taking yourself seriously. You don't believe that you're actually going to make this business work. Because making a business work is a full-time job. And it's one of those 80-hour a week full-time jobs, not a 40-hour a week full-time job. So to think that you could still do the job that you're getting paid to do well and start something that's going to ultimately, hopefully, support you and your lifestyle, it's in conflict. Those things don't really go well together, at least in my head.
Yeah.
And so I think a couple of things happened for me. I made a decision that I was no longer going to talk to anybody about leaving. Because when you talk to people about leaving, whether it's your family or it's coworkers or whatever, when you talk about your big idea, it's almost that release. It releases the endorphins and it kind of scratches that itch for a little bit. And then you forget about it. And then 6 months later, people go, oh, I thought you were out of here. And you're like, yeah, well, I'm over it. And then you get that itch again and you talk about it. So I think when I decided I'm not going to talk to anybody about this anymore, I'm not going to talk to my dad, my uncle, my coworkers, I'm just going to do it. That was a big kind of flag for me that I was like, okay, something about this is different. And then I think when I said it to my girlfriend at the time, who then became my fiance, who then became my wife, she said, I remember driving down the 57. She said, tell me something that nobody knows about you. And I said, I think I'm going to leave my job and start my own business. And when she looked back at me and was like, that's awesome, you should do that. And she didn't go running away.
Yeah.
You know, now to my benefit, we were in a moving car, so she couldn't do it at that point anyways. But that when she supported me. So I think here's the takeaway there, is you got to find somebody or somebodies that you really trust that support you, that have a track record of supporting you and listening. And so when you're ready, you can talk to them, but don't go telling a bunch of people that you want to make this transition. Because I've noticed that for me at least, and if anyone listening sounds like, oh, that sounds like me, James sounds like me. When I tell people about it, I have a hard time executing on it. But if I keep it to myself and I go, okay, I'm just going to do this and I don't care what everyone's opinion is, I'm just going to do it. Those things have worked for me. And the last point I'll make there is kind of circling back to what I started with do you stay at the job and then do things during the night or during the weekend? There's this great concept of burning the boats. Sometimes if you want to storm the island and take the island, you got to burn the boats. You got to get rid of your backup plan. This is different than burning a bridge. And I think that's an important clarification. So it's not saying I quit, here's my 2 weeks notice. F you, F you, F you, right? But what it is, it's saying is I'm not going to worry about the backup plan. I think when a lot of entrepreneurs are in a job and they think about starting a business, they always come back to this concept. Well, they would always hire me back. You know, they like me. They'd always hire me back. What difference does it make? Okay, you're highly employable. You've made it this far. You can always get a job somewhere, whether it's back where you were or somewhere else. Get that out of your head, burn those boats, and think about how am I going to go forward? Don't worry about how am I going to get back.
Yeah. Man, you brought up a lot of great stuff there. And you know, I say it often, but if you're listening to this podcast and you're driving, I hope you will go back about 5 minutes right there. Find this spot, get in front of a browser, get at a desk with a notepad and pen, go back, write a bunch of these notes down, because James just brought some incredible truth there. And I share so much about what you are saying about the idea of burning the boats and moving forward. And there's a survival mindset that comes into play when you don't have the backup plan in your head. You lose a bit of that hunger, that must-do attitude, because you know there's just something back there. Age and stage really does play a role in kind of how we execute out of that 9-to-5 job. You know, if you're sitting on a mortgage with no emergency fund or anything like that, that taints your decision on how you make that transition and that move. What I want all the listeners to hear and what James is saying is it's about intentionality. And I think, man, like what you mentioned about not speaking it, what I heard there was the brilliant truth you wrote about it satisfies the itch. It scratches the itch. And I could see it in my own life and in the lives of many people that have spoken what they want to do, but not moved on it. It's almost like they're testing the response, like to your Prince Charming comment, I'm going to say this and I want to see how you respond to it to know whether or not I'm crazy or if I should. And the idea of not speaking it and doing it, that is fascinating. I can see so much power in that. So thank you for bringing all of that here. And again, listeners, go back, jot notes. Would love to get your comments on what you think about what James is sharing here. But now that you've made the move and you have quit, you gave your 2 weeks notice, your girlfriend, soon to be fiance at that time, is on board with it. You obviously got the confidence of the support system that is your loved one. And a lot of things you did in life were with your brother. Did you speak this to your brother? Did you guys start this together or did one go before the other?
I started the business. Ryan joined a year later. Again, you brought up a really great point, which is worth noting. My story is different than the next guy's story, which is different than the next girl's story. So take these things with a pinch of salt. Ryan had a wife and a three-year-old daughter. So it's a little bit different of a decision for him, right? He 100%. Needs to make sure that income is still coming in. And so in a lot of ways, what's neat about Ryan and I's relationship, and some people have business partners like this, some don't. Some people have family members like this, some don't. I was okay with saying, let me put this on my back. Let me go forge the path. Let me get it to where it needs to be. My goal is to get it to the point where you can leave.
I love that.
You know,
I love that.
And so that's a family thing. And some people have friends that are probably that tight too. But, you know, we were looking out for each other. And that's a principle that we learned from our family. So that's another family of origin thing. Always look out for each other. And if you can bring that person along with you for the ride, then do it. So I took the leap originally. Now, there's this beautiful story that then happens. Ryan goes to Hawaii with his family. You may remember this. There was a missile crisis thing that happened in Hawaii, North Korea.
False alarm, right? Yes.
The false alarm, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, it's not fair to quite attribute it to North Korea, but you get the whole story, right? So for those of you listening, there's a false alarm that gets sent out to everybody on the Hawaiian Islands saying there's a ballistic missile coming, seek cover. Yep. This is not a drill. So, you know, you're hoping to see this is a drill, but when something says this is not a drill, you kind of have to take that at face value, right? He calls me up and he's kind of like, hey, I don't know what's going on. Can you help play some support here, look and see what's going on? This is what we got. You know, an hour later, it was pretty clear that it was, in fact, a drill. In the moment, it wasn't so clear. But I think Ryan was able to reflect and say, man, today could have been the day. What am I doing with my life? Now, not everybody listening, again, is going to have that moment.
Yeah.
But for him, after he came home from Hawaii, he put in his 2 weeks' notice, and it was pretty clear to him what he wanted to do. Luckily for me and for the business, I had set a pretty solid foundation at that point. And so it was good timing.
So Ryan joins the company.
Yeah.
What is Fratsky Media? Because now we're jumping into Fratsky Media. And for all of our listeners, before we walk this journey a bit, share with us what Fratsky Media is and how is it different than your competitors out there?
So Fratsky Media is a digital marketing consultancy. And that last word, consultancy, is really important. A lot of people are familiar with the agency model. And so a lot of people that do marketing or digital marketing might work with an agency. So let's focus on those two words for a second. Agency means that you're giving somebody agency on your behalf to go out and do things. Consultancy means that you're asking somebody for help and you're asking them to come alongside you and consult and point you in the right direction. And so I just want to make that distinguishment clear. At Fratsky Media, we're a consultancy. Our opinion is, our point of view is, we want to teach you how to fish so you can eat for a lifetime, not just catch the fish for you. And as long as you keep signing the retainer check, we'll continue to provide those results. But the second that you are unhappy with our services and you want to go somewhere else, well, too bad. We own everything. We own the keys and you're just going to have to figure it out. Good luck. Right. So now somebody listening, especially a founder, has had that experience at some point in their life, right? They say, okay, we need to figure out marketing. Let's go pay an agency a bunch of money and they'll just solve all of our problems. What we're focused on is helping mid-sized businesses. So folks that are doing anywhere from $10 million to $1 billion in revenue that might be blue collar or they might be a little behind on the times. Their industry hasn't been super focused on digital. Revenue keeps growing. Why do I need to worry about my website, right? Those type of folks. And we come in and help them set the foundation. We help them understand what their competitors are doing out in the digital space, what they could be doing to make digital their competitive edge. And then ultimately, we come alongside them for 12, 24 months, whatever it is, and help them set up the infrastructure to succeed in digital and to, again, use it as their competitive edge and beat the competition. So that's kind of at a high level what Fratsky Media is. And the way that we do that is we've institutionalized digital to try and make it simple and repeatable. So we look at digital as 8 distinct channels, from your website down to social media, digital advertising, and, you know, fill in the blanks. Mm-hmm. I won't bore everybody with all 8. And then we've identified within those 8 channels, what's the bare minimum and then what's the leader? What are you going to do within that channel to be a leader in that space? And then we work with our clients to help them understand how quickly we can get them to that leader status. What are the moves we need to make? And it's so gratifying. It's so rewarding because you're able to come in and share wisdom, open people's eyes and help them grow their revenue. To them, it seems like magic, but to us, it's something that we've gotten pretty darn good at. So it's nice to come in and be able to help folks kind of step their game up in a way that they didn't know was possible. Let me end on this note. We've had clients sometimes say to us, well, we didn't have a website before and, you know, revenue keeps growing. And so a website's not important. What if you did have a website? How much more money would you find? you don't want to make more money? Is that what you're telling me right now? You know? And so it's always kind of a fun little process that we go through. But yeah, that's at a high level what we do. Does that make sense to you, James?
Absolutely. And I love that we have listeners right now that are probably out saying to themselves, like, wait, there's actually businesses out there that don't have a website. There is a demographic that the idea of not having a website is equal to not having a cell phone. Like, it makes zero sense why a business wouldn't do it. But there are so many businesses that still do not have a digital presence. And it sounds like that's the market you're trying to fit or trying to meet. But my question in this, and you know, part of the startup story is, especially when the small business arena, what are the things that keep you up at night right now? Because you're new. I mean, 2 years old for Fratsky Media. There are challenges that come with starting anything from ground zero, but you're still really early on. And so for those listeners that are starting something new, what keeps you up at night right now?
For the entrepreneur that's listening that, again, has similar qualities that I do, I can be a visionary to a default sometimes, right? So it's always, what's the next idea? Or here's the new idea, or here's the thing. What we've had to do to be successful, and I would say that this is probably true for anybody at that, we're at the 2.5 mark, making our way to 3 years. This is probably consistent for anybody within that 1 to 5 year range for a startup is stay focused. Yeah. So the things that keep me up at night is, how do I stay focused and get all the other ideas out of my head? You know, it's fun to go chase down certain things. It's fun. We have a very fun office. We have a fun environment. I like being in front of a camera, right? I haven't made a video in 2.5 years, right? Yeah. Because that's a distraction. This business is growing and it's helping people. And as long as I can invest myself in this business and stay focused and not let the outside noise come in, it will continue to grow. I listen to podcasts. I like the Tim Ferriss podcast, and he's got all these quote unquote high performers on there. And one of the biggest things they always say is you got to learn how to say no to things.
Yeah.
And I think, well, what a crock is that? What do you mean? Like, how many things could you possibly be saying no to? How lucky are you to have all these opportunities? Well, at the 2.5 year mark, I can tell you, man, my eyes are open to, it is about saying no to things. It's about saying no to different people reaching out that want to do different things. It's about saying no to different charitable organizations that might want you to be invested in them and things, and different opportunities that we've passed up on. Although it would have been nice from an ego standpoint, like, yeah, I am a successful business owner in Orange County. I should be represented. It's like, you have to remind yourself just to stay humble. And all those opportunities that are about ego, those will come and go, and they won't be as big of a deal as you think they are. It's like if you've ever been on TV before for a game show or the news, you're always like, oh, this is my big break. People are going to see me. And the reality is it plays and then it disappears. It's not that big of a deal. And so kind of being able to identify as a business owner, what are the real opportunities? What are the ego opportunities? Say no to the ego opportunities as often as you can. And you'll make a mistake from time to time and say yes. But then hopefully by the end of whatever that exhausting thing you participated in was, and you didn't get any meaningful movement on your business in relation to it, you go, oh, okay, I learned that lesson. I'm not going to do that thing again. So I think back to your question, James, what keeps me up at night? Growing the business, being able to grow the team, being able to support the team as a good leader or even a great leader one day, being able to make sure we're providing 11-star service in anything that we do. I stole that from Airbnb, who stole it from somebody else. Basic concept there is 5-star service should be the standard if we're going on a 5-star scale, right? Like, nobody goes somewhere and says, okay, give me 3-star service, please. That's my expectation. In fact, I'd be willing to venture that most people listening to this, if they saw a 3 or 4-star review on Google or Yelp, they would say, I'm not going to go there. Why would I waste my time, right? Well, what does 6 stars look like? What does 7 stars look like? You know, if it's an Airbnb, 11 stars looks like you check in, The guy takes you for a tour around the town. He's made a reservation for you at his favorite restaurant. He's planned your entire trip. It's like so much further outside of what you expected. And so that's another thing that keeps me up at night is how do we not provide the bare minimum service? How do we go above and beyond? And when you're growing your business and you're doubling each year, that becomes more difficult, right? So you have to think about how do I continue to provide that service?
That is awesome. And one of the questions I want to ask, two episodes ago, we had Josh Stein with Seat Insiders, and part of his journey was as a young professional, not an entrepreneur yet, but as a young professional, it was keeping up with the Joneses, you know, as a young person making good money working for a big four consultancy, the cars and the constant eating out and drinks and the entertaining and whining and dining. And he accumulated quite a bit of debt that became a barrier before he could launch his venture. As a young entrepreneur, because I know I've got young entrepreneurs listening. As a young entrepreneur, do you find yourself challenged with keeping up with the Joneses as you are out at various networking events or various entrepreneurial conferences or endeavors wanting to keep up with the Joneses? Or are you disciplined enough to stay in your lane?
Oh, I'm human. Yeah. And I think we all struggle with this. I think the grass always seems greener on the other side. Mm-hmm. Right. The lesson that I keep trying to teach myself, and I will probably be teaching it to myself until the day I die, is the grass isn't greener on the other side. It's greener where you water it. You have to attend to it, right? Here's my solve for going to networking events and feeling inferior. Go to less networking events. Sounds counterintuitive, but here's the thing. I'm a millennial. So I grew up with Facebook and different things like that. The people that will excel are the ones that identify social media, personal social media. Mm-hmm. So this isn't necessarily advice I'd give to my clients. I'm talking now as James, the human being. Social media is a distraction.
Yeah.
And there's tons of research out there that says that it's not only a distraction, but it negatively impacts your mental state of mind.
Yep, yep.
And so I think young professionals or young entrepreneurs have that to deal with. So you have your Facebooks, your Instagrams. Now LinkedIn is a place where you can get into some rabbit holes if you try. Yep, you can. Yep. So I think that if you can try to eliminate those distractions, go on to your new iPhone 10 or whatever number we're at now. And by the way, I have an iPhone 6. Again, counterintuitive, right? You would think, okay, he'd be super techie, but I think this kind of gets to the heart of what you were saying earlier. You have to find opportunities not to keep up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
So of course I want the new iPhone because I want to be at the meeting and say, oh, look, my new iPhone. But I take pride in the fact that, well, this iPhone 6 works the same way as the iPhone 10 does. I don't have to spend that money. So you have to look for opportunities to cut out your exposure to wanting to keep up with the Joneses. Get rid of TV if you can do that, cut the cord, stop going and checking Facebook 5 times a day, delete the app from your phone if you can, right? And some people can't for certain reasons, but if you can, do it. Eliminate the amount of notifications you get on your phone. I think all of those things help you fight against what's natural as a human, which is wanting to keep up with the Joneses.
That's awesome. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that journey. Because again, it is something that I don't think people talk about because it requires a bit of vulnerability, but we're all susceptible to it. It doesn't matter what stage they are. I mean, even you mentioned Disney, even the Bob Igers of the world are always trying to keep up with the Joneses. And it's that perspective of the other grass, or it's just that general discontent that we have buried inside of us. So it's part of our being, and we have to be diligent and intentional to shore that up so that we can stay laser focused on what it is that we're trying to build for the long term. You got to play the long term, not the short game.
Absolutely. One last point I want to make on that too, James, is debt is a son of a bee. And so I would say a young professional or somebody that's in their 50s or 60s or whatever it is, any decision that you make that forces you to go into debt, you should think long and hard about, especially if you're a young professional that wants to be an entrepreneur. The best gift that you can give to yourself is not being in debt. The second best gift that you can give to yourself is having savings.
Yes.
So that,
yes.
So, right? Those things kind of go hand in hand.
Yes.
If you can't have savings, at least not be in debt and vice versa, yeah. right? So, because then, listen, when I made the decision to start this business, it's because I busted my ass and I worked hard and I didn't spend a lot. So I could support myself.
And again, the reason I'm asking these questions for all the listeners is to go back to your earlier point about not talking about it. It's about intentionality. It's about knowing what it is you want and fighting that battle every single day to keep that main thing the main thing.
Right.
Because there are so many things that can derail us. And so thank you for sharing all of that. And as our time comes to an end, there are two questions that I ask every single founder. The first one is so important, and I believe it with every bit of my being, and it's about gratitude. And the question is, as you look back on your entire journey, who are the people that you point to that have contributed in such a significant way to your entrepreneurial journey to where you stand today that you just have such immense gratitude for them? And the reason I ask this question is that I believe that if we stop remembering those people and remembering all the shoulders that we stood upon to get to where we're at, we'll begin to think we reached that point by ourselves. We begin to isolate ourselves, and that will inevitably lead to our failure. So who do you point to with such incredible gratitude for your life journey?
First off, when you asked that question, this weird sense of emotion just came over me because I'm like starting to go through the list and I'm like, wow, I'm really impacted right now. And I won't be able to name everybody. So, but let me tell you this. My grandparents always would sit there and listen to my brother and I share these out in space ideas and different things. And they'd encourage it. And they do that to this day. My grandpa Joe will sit and listen to us talk for hours. And it's just nice to have that outlet. Yeah. And then have people genuinely believe you. I would be remiss if I didn't say my mom and my dad, again, just seeing their journey and being able to pull on the hard work and the visionary stuff that we talked about earlier. And then some of my professors at Cal State Fullerton. Again, when they notice students that want to learn and want to excel, they'll invest their own time. And it's always like, why are they doing this? Why would they do that? So the human race is confusing and you wonder why anybody would want to help anybody. And I'm still trying to figure that out sometimes, but those are some of the people that stand out.
That's awesome. That is awesome. The last question to wrap it all up. We've been talking to our listeners and the numbers of the tens of thousands. But right now, this last question, I want you to picture yourself sitting with one singular person. And maybe that person is a current entrepreneur who is frustrated and discouraged with the lack of traction they've had. Maybe that entrepreneur is someone who is an aspiring entrepreneur. They've got a 9-to-5, but they've got mortgage, kids, or maybe they're 60 and they think that they're just too old for it. But whatever it is, they have some narrative as to why they can't move and pursue their entrepreneurial dreams or ambitions. Or maybe you're speaking to that defeated entrepreneur, the one who's been punched in the gut time and time again, and they're now starting to think that they just can't execute, period, and willing to call it quits. Who is it you would like to speak to, and what do you have to say to them?
I think I'd like to speak to the entrepreneur that is waiting and maybe is at that job and is just waiting for the right time. And we talked about this a little bit earlier, right? So I'm kind of in some ways trying to find people like me that were just waiting. And I think I would just tell them that take the leap, burn the boat. Brené Brown, I don't know if you're familiar with her writing. She's got this very popular book called Daring Greatly. And the concept is based off a Theodore Roosevelt quote that basically says that when you're in the arena fighting, there's lots of people in the stands that are going to have opinions, but they're not in the arena. You are. And so when you're in the arena, you have to be willing to win or lose. And it's okay to do either. At least you took the chance. At least you were in the arena. So I would say to that person, get in the arena, get out of the stands, get in the arena. You might win, you might lose, but you really don't get the benefit of moving forward unless you get in the arena and take a chance. And I would just encourage them to do that.
I would love to hear what your key takeaways were from James's journey. I know for me, it was the idea that oftentimes we vocalize our ambitions to see how those around us respond to it. And then we allow that response to dictate how we move forward.
What James was talking about here is not the feedback loop that is critical when developing a product. No, James is talking about the tendency we have to seek the validation and affirmation from those around us. You know, for me, that was extremely personal, where I would constantly talk about this venture I was going to pursue, and depending upon how people responded was whether or not I actually did it. As James says, it was looking to scratch that itch. You know, another key takeaway from James's story is that staying focused is key for any small business in the first few years of the company. Oftentimes, we look to certain activities as a success metric. Activities like a board seat with a nonprofit or any activities that are not directly related to your business. You need to be laser focused those first few years to keep the company alive. James's entire story was about intentionality, and that is something that often gets lost in the entrepreneurial journey. I think part of the reason it gets lost is because we want success right now. It's the Veruca Salt syndrome. You remember Veruca Salt from Willy Wonka, right? I want an Oompa Loompa, and I want it now, Daddy. I know it seems odd to relate Willy Wonka to entrepreneurship, but that's just the reality of it. We see what success looks like on social media, and we think that that's exactly how it should be. We think that it's something that is attained in the short term. We need to keep that survival mindset that we have in the early few months and keep it for a very long time in order to ensure that our business is shored up for success. We need to keep the main thing the main thing. Entrepreneurship is incredibly challenging, and one of the ways it becomes harder than it needs to be is through comparison and lack of focus. I hope James's startup story was of value and benefit to you. And if you've been around the startup story for any length of time, then you know how much emphasis I put on the idea that entrepreneurs support other entrepreneurs. So if you found any value from James's story, then stop by fratzkemedia.com. That's fratzkemedia.com. And let James know that you found value in his story and appreciate what he shared with us. You can also reach out to him on LinkedIn. In our show notes, we'll have links to both of those. Entrepreneurs support other entrepreneurs. So let's make sure to show up for James and Fratzke Media. And now for my personal ask. The Startup Story community has been so incredible about sharing our podcast with others, but we have more stories to tell and more people to reach. We too are a startup, and word of mouth is everything. So please follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Startup Story, or on Twitter at StartupStory_. If you're on LinkedIn, please search for The Startup Story and follow our company page. LinkedIn is a really powerful way to raise awareness of the show. But the most impactful way you can help us grow our audience is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Or if you listen to the show via Spotify, then please simply share the podcast directly from your Spotify app or wherever you listen to the show. These simple actions can make a huge impact in getting these amazing founder stories out to the masses. And please make sure to tag or mention The Startup Story when you do share, so that we can connect with you and say thank you directly. I'm so incredibly appreciative of the fact that you listen to this show each and every week. And I look forward to sharing these amazing stories with you every Tuesday with hopes of encouraging and inspiring you to start your story. If you like this podcast and are thinking of creating your own, consider talking to my producer, Danny Osmond. He helps thought leaders, influencers, executives, and authors create, launch, and produce podcasts that grow their business and make a real impact in this world. You can contact him today at emeraldcitypro.com/startupstory.